This is Amanda.
And this is Mike.
Hi, Amanda. Is Mike there with you?
I'm right here as well.
Mike, it's so good to finally meet you.
All right. Yeah, you too. It's been such a long time, you know?
Exactly.
Well, thanks for...
I've only known you a brief moment or two, but it seems like an eternity, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Especially after listening to music, your music for such a long time.
Well, thanks, guys. Everybody there at the station and you both for playing the music and for allowing what's happened at Americana to happen. We've held the number one spot for the second week now, so I'm really thrilled about that.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time out, Dwight, to join us. We're big fans here at KWMR, and especially on Bakersfield and beyond. We play quite a bit of your music. And congratulations, by the way, on the Americana radio chart for Three Pairs. It's a fantastic album. And
thank you. I tried to get them, your show, Bakersfield and Beyond, I tried to get the Country Music Hall of Fame to title the exhibit. It's titled The Bakersfield Sound. It's been down there since March they opened, and it stays throughout the year. And it's great. If anybody ever gets to Nashville that's listening to the show today here, please go in and see that exhibit. It's really curated very well and with great respect to, as it says, the Bakersfield Sound, Buck Owens, Merle Haggard, and the California Country Music Sound. But I said, you know, you should call it Greater Bakersfield. that kind of reaches where it reached, all up and down the West Coast. And as Waylon Jennings told me, even in Phoenix, Arizona, he was part of the kind of the Bakersfield Sound, that West Coast sound, that the only daddy to walk on. You know, Ralph Mooney, who played steel for Buck, was Waylon's steel player.
Right. He also played steel for Win Stewart as well.
Right. Yeah, he began with Win. That's why I think Buck and he met, because Buck was Win's lead guitar player on a lot of records.
And now we play a lot of your music on Bakersfield and beyond, along with those icons, Merle, Buck, Lefty Frizzell, Win Stewart. What was it that drew a Midwest kid to the West Coast sound of music?
Well, literally, at the time I was in college, it was just prior to the outlaw movement breaking, although that broke in 75, my second year of school. And Emmylou Lou Harris was the literal beacon, because she had come off FM rock radio when I, you know, was in high school still. I started hearing that first album, and then Elite Hotel came, and that whole connection to Graham Parsons and the mystique and the mystery of the Flying Burrito Brothers. And I heard about this kind of rhinestone cosmic cowboy thing that was going on out in the West Coast. And Emmylou proved to me that traditional forms of country music could still be very pertinent to a young audience. And that literally is what drew me to the West Coast. But the echo return of Buck Owens and Merle Haggard was there, even in Emmy's music at that time, you know. She was paying tribute to it. The Byrds, Creedence Clearwater Revival, and then it was the beginning stages of the Eagles just blowing up. But it really was, if there was a single thing that I could point to, it was Emmylou Harris. And, you know, and all the attendant huge commercial acts that were blowing up at the time, you know, with Linda Ronstadt's success and the Eagles, as I said, and everything that was going on the West Coast. There was a scene. And as I look back, I realize after going to Nashville at the time in the late 70s, that was really a writer's town. Was and still is. It was about publishing and being a songwriter first and foremost. And the West Coast allowed, you know, a young guy like me to come and find myself through live performance.
Right.
And there was a scene in L.A. and Southern California. The Palomino is still here, which I had the, you know, the great fortune of being able to refer to in song through Mike Stinson's great title, The Late Great Golden State, that he was so gracious in allowing me to cover a couple of years ago on Population Maine. And, you know, that was you know, the moment that I arrived, you know, on the West Coast, 1977.
Right, and that actually leads straight into my next question was how much of that punk music scene in 1980s Los Angeles, late 70s, influenced your music?
Well, it influenced it mightily. By the time, when I got, like I said, I'd been listening to the first half of the Eagles' career and, all their great success at commercial, radio with their version of country rock, although in deference to my friend Chris Hillman, he hates the hyphenated term, although I think he's come to terms with that term being the fact of what he created. Beginning really, and I look to Chris Hillman as one of the godfathers and architects of modern country rock and modern youth-oriented country music, and that he really, as a bluegrass mandolin player, joined the Byrds and played bass and really introduced country music to the Byrds, and is one of the architects of country rock music as we know it, because of his bringing it into the Byrds and introducing it to young rock audiences vis-a-vis the Byrds and the Sweetheart of the Rodeo album, which for my money is the first ever country rock album. Roger McGuinn really was a big fan of folk music, but wasn't a big, exponent of country music. Chris is who, brought that element to the Byrds. And then he brought in Clarence White first on guitar on the Yesterday and Today album. And he had me listen. He said, go listen to Clarence pre-B-Bender and the brilliance of Clarence's playing. And then the Sweetheart of the Rodeo album, Chris is who brought Graham Parsons into the Byrds and then formed the Burritos with Graham. And really, arguably, wrote two of the great titles Graham ever wrote were written with Chris Hillman. That's Sin City and Wheels.
Right.
Which they wrote about their new motorcycles that they had and rode all over the San Fernando Valley. So there was a legacy of country music culturally on the West Coast that allowed me to, be the next wave, if you will, of migratory Appalachian-born sons that ended up in that Steinbeck kind of way, wandering, to the West Coast to find my adult life.
So, Dwight, who is your audience? How would you describe who you make your music for? Because there's really nobody else like you.
I'm blessed to have whatever audience I have, and I don't purport to know them better than they know themselves, and I'm just lucky to have had them, and I make my music first and foremost, not to sound selfish, but for me, because I think you have to enjoy what you're doing before you stand any chance of engaging anybody else in listening to what you're doing musically.
Well, that authenticity is what I think draws us to your music specifically, and really to the Bakersfield sound overall, because that exists throughout the music from the very beginning all the way up until the pretty far beyond phase.
Right, it's pretty much...
One of the reasons that we covered Dim Light, Thick Smoke, and Loud Loud Music is because Joe Mathis wrote that after driving to Bakersfield in 1958 one night, and he was already a big country star, but he'd heard about this band up in Bakersfield that was supposed to be really hot and really good, and he decided he better go up and see them, and got to a place called the Blackboard and went in to see this band, and he said they were good, but they were the loudest thing I ever saw. And he said he could only take it for a while because they were that loud. And he got back in the car with his wife, Rosalie Mapus, and they were driving back down Old Route 99 to L.A. and he wrote the song Dim Lights, Thick Smoke, and Loud, Loud Music about that band. It was Buck Owens and his Schoolhouse Playboys. Circa about the time he was still working on Len Stewart's records and Tommy Collins' records. And prior to forming the Buckaroos, and which Merle claims rightfully so that he gave Buck the idea for the name. Buck said, they were out on one of the tours early on when Buck was starting to have success and said, you know, I don't have a name for this band. He said, I got to have a name. And Merle said, well, I think maybe you ought to call them the Buckaroos, Buck.
And Buck seems kind of natural.
No, I think that's right. And that's how they became dubbed the Buckaroos. But, you know, they were all about, Merle said it best. He and I did an interview for the exhibit that I talked about, you know, the Bakersfield Sound that's at the Country Music Hall of Fame. And he said to me in our interview at Capitol Studios last December, he said, Dwight, you know the difference in country music that came out of Nashville and the country music came out of the West Coast? I said, no, I don't know what your view would be of that. He said, country music that came out of Nashville came out of the churches. He said, and country music on the West Coast came out of the honky-tonks and bars. And that really is, if you want to distill it to a singular, succinct kind of difference, for me, I think that's an accurate description of you know, the difference of what the catalyst for both forms of country music was.
That's a great way to put it. You know, we interviewed Don McLeese not long ago, and both really enjoyed his book, A Thousand Miles from Nowhere. And in it, you know, he really was building up to the release of your next CD, which is Three Pairs. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what it took to create this latest record, because it's been a while since you did this, really. I mean, release an album.
Well, you know what? As John Lennon said, I'm maybe paraphrasing him here, hopefully not misquoting, but he said, life's what goes on while you're making other plans. And that's kind of what happened. I mean, I did Blame the Vein, the last studio album for New West, in 2005. And then when Buck passed at the end of 2006, we decided to go in, and New West was gracious enough to allow that to be my next album commitment for them, which was the tribute to Buck, the Dwight Sings Buck album. And we did that with the same kind of energy and effort that we would do in 2007 to make a new studio album. Once that came out, I didn't really tour the remainder of 2007 or most of 2008. And we did some TV with it, and we started doing, you know, some live dates in 2009. And I began to rethink where I was going to release the next album. And Cameron Strang, who ran New West Records, you know, we had fulfilled our commitment there. And he suggested, when I was looking back at the major labels, that I go to a major label again. And it was Cameron that suggested talking to Warners again. And as fate would have it, timing just is what played out. We ended up waiting the better part of another year before we re-signed with Warners because of some changes at the corporate and at the label. But I feel really fortunate to have had the opportunity to go back there and make this new album with them. And there's a sense of kind of having it be a full circle moment of coming back. And you know, we did a bonus track of Ring of Fire on this, on some versions of the album that was on Guitars Cadillacs, although it's kind of a cowpunk, you know, retreatment of the arrangement of Ring of Fire on this album. And this album kind of, you know, presented itself to me, and it took place over about a 9.5 month period, but it was, you know, really would have been compressed in the studio to 2.5 months in terms of the actual, you know, days work in the recording studio.
Well, it seems like you're having a whole lot of fun. I got the chance to see you at Hardly Strictly Bluegrass. That was pretty fantastic.
Well, we had a great time up there. What a great event that is, and what an honor it was to finally play it.
Well, what's next for Dwight Yoakam?
Well, now we're going to go here and there and a little bit everywhere to perform the music live. We're starting the first real kind of named version of the tour in Australia next week. We leave late this week and fly down and begin 9 cities and 10 shows down in Australia. And then we come back up to the States. We're playing a bit through December, and then we begin in earnest again the first of the year. So that's really the focus for the next few months, is playing the music live.
Really focusing on the music. Any acting projects going on?
There's nothing that's locked in. There are some things in the works, but, you know, that is always a case of being at the mercy of opportunity. Actors all are. And I have been fortunate to have had many terrific opportunities as an actor, and hopefully I'll continue to have opportunities. And I'm excited about, being able to act as another form of expression.
That's great. We've been fortunate enough to talk with Chris Hillman on our show and really putting together a catalog of folks who can speak to the Bakersfield sound, and we're very excited that we're able to talk to you and help to make the spins off of 3 pairs to help you get to the top of the charts out here at our little radio station in Northern California.
Well, it's the little stations that can that make it happen, and thanks to you, I was number one at Americana, and to all your listeners, thanks to them. Everybody that ever bought one of my records over the last 26 years almost now, thank you for doing so. I've been very fortunate to have had the career that I've had, and to still be able to make music and make my living doing it. I owe a debt of thanks to all the listeners and to all the radio stations.
Yeah, and the listeners, thank you as well for putting out that great music.
And thanks to guys, for everybody at Americana, for allowing me to stay there at number one for 2 weeks now in a row.
Well, that's great. We're going to air this on our show, Bakersfield and Beyond, and I'm sure our listeners will be thrilled. And we know you have a busy schedule, Dwight, so thanks for taking the time to talk with us here at KWMR.
It's my pleasure.
All right, take care.
Adios, guys.
Thanks,
bye.
Dwight.